Well, that's the end of the sermon on the predominance of the fear of God in the New Testament. And it's remarkable that he spent 50, 55 minutes or whatever it was, and he hasn't told us what the fear of God is. It's a large topic. It's one I hope you're convinced, looking at the survey of the Bible, is a central topic. I think the conclusions he draws are good conclusions, and it's a topic that we should all be intimately familiar with. Let's start with just a few quotes about the fear of God from various authors. One comes from John Murray in his book on Principles of Conduct. The fear of God is the soul of godliness. Again, this doesn't define what the fear of God is, but it really shows its singular importance in the life of a believer. The controlling sense of the majesty and the holiness of God and the profound reverence which this apprehension draws forth constitutes the essence of the fear of God. Again, that comes from Murray, and that's it's classic Murray in the way he would word things. But this idea, the controlling sense of the majesty and the holiness of God, the profound reverence which this apprehension draws forth, constitutes the essence of the fear of God. And I believe it's in a different sermon that Martin has. He cites John Brown, and I couldn't find the actual citation, so I don't know. There were just hundreds of millions of John Browns in Scotland, so I don't know which one this is. But the fear of God consists in cherishing an awesome sense of the infinite grandeur and excellence corresponding to the revelation God has made of these things in His Word and in His works, inducing in us a conviction that the favor of that God is the greatest of all blessings and His disfavor is the greatest of all evils. So there's a lot to think about when you consider how important any of these statements might be. If something is the very soul of godliness, well, that requires some thought on our part and what we're going to do about it. If it's a controlling sense, if it's a cherishing and awesome sense, well, those are things that we should know a little bit more about. So after we've heard this survey about the fear of God, I'm curious, what words or phrases come to mind to describe the importance of the fear of God in the Bible? From just listening to this survey or from whatever reading you've done on your own, what words or phrases or thoughts come to mind to describe the fear of God, whatever that is?
The beginning of wisdom.
What?
The beginning of wisdom.
The beginning of wisdom, yeah. The beginning of wisdom, it's good. What else?
God's holy presence.
God's holy presence, yeah. And those two don't sound like the same thing, do they? No, that's right. Yeah. What other thoughts, phrases, verses?
Central to our worship.
It's the centrality of fear to our worship, yeah. Yeah. This is a big deal. What notable differences can we see between the testaments of the fear of God? I just worded that very poorly, didn't I? So, what differences do we see between the Old and the New Testament in the fear of God? Oh, in the treatment. I'm sorry. This is what happens when you have a really bad set of eyes between the Old and New Testaments. I can't even read my own construction.
I can't
read my own print. It's terrible. I'm falling apart. So how does the New Testament differ, Vicki?
You say that the fear of God emphasized in the Old Testament, I think, points to the need for Christ. And the New Testament.
So the Old Testament illustrates our need for a mediator. That's right, because God is holy. That's good. New Testament seems to treat sanctification. Yeah, okay, that's good. Yeah. Any other differences come to mind? Any similarities? Are they less different than what some might imagine?
Well,
I suspect they are, actually. So here's an interesting problem that Pastor Martin raised when he was describing this increase in growing in the increase of the fear of God. If that's important, how would you measure it? How would you measure an increase in the fear of God in your life? If cultivating the fear of God is important, we should want more of it. So how would you know you're growing in the fear of God? Vicki?
If you're growing in your knowledge of the Scriptures, you should be growing in your knowledge of the fear of God.
If you're growing in your knowledge of the Scriptures, you should also be growing in your knowledge of the fear of God. Yeah. Right, yes. The Scriptures inform our fear. That's a good way of putting it. Any other mechanisms or thoughts about that?
Fruit of the Spirit. Growth in the fruit of the Spirit. Physical aspects.
Growth in the fruit of the Spirit. Yeah. Outwardly demonstrating. Yeah, I think that's good.
My thought would be a sensitivity to sin or a complacency to sin would be a good sign.
A sensitivity to or complacency for sin? Yeah, that's a very good one. Sure. Yeah, you would imagine if someone is insensitive to their sinful condition, remains so, that the fear of God is not something that would be animating their heart or a controlling sense. So, yeah. Well, I think those are... Well, I'm not going to try to answer those questions this morning, but I think it is a helpful thing to think about. This is a very interesting historical anecdote to describe what the fear of God is. Many of you may not have even been born, but those who were, in February of 1990, one of the greatest upsets in sporting history took place when James Buster Douglas decided to fight Iron Mike Tyson. And this was a fight scheduled in Japan. It was a big, big, big deal for Buster. It turned out to be a big deal. It wasn't at the time. There was a... Douglas was a 42-1 underdog, and people thought that Mike Tyson would simply crush him as he had all of his previous fights. Tyson was undefeated and undisputed, but in the 10th round, after a 9th round knockdown by Tyson on to Douglas, Douglas gets up and he throttles Iron Mike, and there he is on the ground. But what was interesting is what was going on in Douglas's life at the time. I'm not trying to draw a strict causal relationship between these two things, but it is interesting. This is Douglas in an interview. He says, another thing, I was very relaxed. I wasn't afraid of the man. I fear no man because I believe in God. That's the only man I fear. Thank God and praise the Lord Jesus Christ. It comes from a book called Tyson Douglas, The Inside Story, The Upset of the Century. Now that's really fascinating. Now it's hard to imagine what kind of fear, if you weren't part of that movement, what kind of fear did Mike Tyson inspire within people? And it was a huge fear. People were very much afraid. You could see when men got in a ring that fighting Mike Tyson was something they were not really all that interested in. It sounded like a good idea at the time, but they're having second thoughts. And Tyson is reported to have told people up front that I want to hit this man so hard that I hear the bones crunch in his head as I shove his nose into his skull. Now, that'll give a man second thoughts about whether or not he wants to do this for a living. But what's interesting is how Buster Douglas didn't think of fear of this man as something that controlled him, but a fear of God. Now, I don't know how fearing God doesn't make you afraid of Iron Mike Tyson, who was undefeated and undisputed in his championship reign. But it seemed to have an effect on Buster Douglas. So it's interesting in my mind that Douglas would want to discuss this particular fact in an interview, and he said it on more than one occasion, apparently. So who knows what happens when you decide who you're going to fear. All right, so I want to take a look at... we've got about 15 minutes left, and I want to run through a bunch of things. Pastor Martin really didn't describe in any kind of practical detail what the fear of God is. And I find the topic of fear to be very complex, to be nuanced, and poorly understood. So we're going to spend some time thinking about different terms that describe fear and the hierarchy of fears that humans or fallen men experience. So one Puritan describes natural fear in a very simplistic way, but helpful. John Flavel writes that natural fear is the trouble or the perturbation of mind from the apprehensions of approaching evil or impending danger. So one of the problems we have is, as we consider the fear of God, and we see this survey that there's a lot to it, is we have to make sure we're not approaching it in the way people would approach a natural or secular fear. So we don't want silly little statements about the fear of God being reverential awe. And that's pretty meaningless in a sense. It doesn't really tell you much. It doesn't tell you what awe is, for one thing. So discovering what fear means and what its synonyms mean, I think, might be helpful for us. So there are lots of degrees of fear that people experience, a good many of them, and I want to run through a list of them and look at the definitions so that we can see that there's possibly more to this fear of God, even when we're looking at it through largely secular definitions than maybe what we anticipated up front. This comes from a variety of sources, it's not exhaustive. These are not all the definitions, just ones that I culled. So Webster's, in his 1828 edition, has an interesting summary. He says, fear is a painful emotion or a passion excited by an expectation of evil or the apprehension of impending danger. That corresponds largely with what Flavel just said. Fear expresses less apprehension than dread, and dread less than terror and fright. The force of this passion, beginning with the most moderate degree, may be thus expressed: fear, dread, terror, and fright. Fear is accompanied with a desire to avoid or ward off the expected evil, and fear is the uneasiness of mind upon the thought of a future evil likely to befall us. So we look at fear, we've got dread, terror, and fright. Surprisingly, these words are used within the scriptures to describe good things, and so we can't simply dismiss them all and say, well, that's just secular demarcation of ideas. So here are a few select definitions of fear: a sudden and terrible event, a peril that comes, the emotion of pain or uneasiness caused by the sense of impending danger or by the prospect of some possible evil, a state of alarm or dread, an apprehensive feeling toward anything regarded as a source of danger or toward a person regarded as able to inflict injury or punishment. That would be Iron Mike. A mingled feeling of dread and reverence toward God. Solicitude, anxiety of the safety of a person or thing. That's an interesting definition. An object of fearfulness, to affright, to terrify, to drive away or prevent approach by fear. Fear has a broad sense of meaning attached to it. Dread. How about the great fear or apprehensions? This is not just fear of the apprehension or the anxiety of an impending or approaching evil, but a great fear. It expresses more than fear and less than terror or fright. It's an uneasiness or alarm excited by expected pain, loss, or other evil. To be in terror of is the definition of dread. To anticipate with alarm, distaste, and reluctance, the dreaded, the long drive home. To hold in awe and reverence, to dread someone. To be very afraid, or profound fear, terror. Fearful or distasteful anticipation, an object of fear, awe, reverence. Causing terror or fear, a dread disease, an inspiring awe, the dread presence of the headmaster, or the dread Pirate Roberts, right? When the dread Pirate Roberts was mentioned, you know, there was usually some ominous sound being played, right? How about terror? Extreme fear, violent dread, fright, fear that agitates the body and mind. It's intense, overpowering fear. In scriptures, the sudden judgments of God are called terrors. Oh, how they are brought to desolation as in a moment. They are utterly consumed with terrors. Remember, I'll draw your attention to Paul's use of the word terror. He says, Knowing therefore the terror of God, we persuade men. It was an evangelistic motivation, was to have terror in your mind. The threatenings of wicked men or evil apprehended from themselves. Excuse me. Awful majesty, calculated to impress fearfulness. Death is the king of terrors, and the terror of jackboots pounding down the street. Two uses of that word. And we see that terror is important, but we have awful embedded again as another definition, another word. How about just fright itself? The sudden intense fear is if something immediately threatening. Alarm. It's distinguished from dread by the suddenness of the threat in the shorter duration. So dread has in mind something of a much longer term, whereas fright is something that is maybe expressed by the sight of a spider. Apprehension. Fear. Suspicion, the prospect of future evil accompanied with uneasiness of mind. Again, we have dread. This is apprehension. Awe. How about to inspire with dread? That's one of the definitions of awe there. To inspire with dread. To strike fear into. By then, the influence of fear. A mixed emotion of reverence, respect, dread, and wonder. Inspired by authority, genius, great beauty, sublimity, and might. Fear, dread, inspired by something great or terrific. There's terrific where we get terror. The power to inspire dread. Awe. The power to inspire dread. We also know what awe is not, don't we, Will? What is awe not? Yeah, we don't look at pictures of the internet with someone saying, "Isn't that awesome?" Well, I'm sorry, that's not awesome. No, that's not. How about horror? A painful emotion compounded of loathing and fear. A shuddering with terror and repugnance. Strong aversion mingled with dread. The feeling excited by something shocking or frightful. An excessive degree of fear or a painful emotion which makes a person tremble. To terror, a shuddering with fear, but appropriately, terror or a sensation approaching it, accompanied with hatred and detestation. Dreadful thoughts, the horror. Panic, a sudden overpowering terror, often affecting many people at once. So panic is something that's used individually, but also used in group settings. A sudden fright, particularly of a sudden fright without real cause, or terror inspired by a trifling cause or a misapprehension of danger. Alarm, a sudden fear caused by the realization of danger. A warning of existing or approaching danger. So remember, we're looking at the sphere of how we think about fear, because many of these same thoughts are mentioned in the Bible, they're communicated in the Scriptures as things which we ought to be cultivating at times within our life. So we need to know what they are. Dismay, to deprive of that strength or firmness of mind which constitutes courage, to discourage, to dishearten. I don't think that's right to sing. Or depress the spirits of resolution, hence to affright or terrify. To fall, or the loss of courage, a sinking of the spirits, depression, dejection, a yielding to fear. That loss of firmness which is affected by fear or terror. It's fear impressed, it's terror felt. You just imagine someone being dismayed at the overwhelming size of the army or something along those lines. Consternation, astonishment, amazement, or horror that confounds the faculties and incapacitates a person for consultation and execution, excessive terror, wonder, or surprise. It's interesting how some of these words have a large span of sense attached to them. Excessive terror, wonder, or surprise might all be part of consternation. Trepidation, an involuntary trembling, a quaking, a quivering, particularly from fear or terror, hence a state of terror. State of alarm, of dread, apprehension, discomposure, anxious embarrassment, a temperament that is perturbed and lacking in composure. And perturbed is one of the ways we Flavel defined fear. Anxious embarrassment, there twice. About foreboding, a fearful apprehension. This is just a sense of the danger coming, that something bad is going to happen, a sense of impending evil or misfortune, an evil omen, a portent. Timidity, just fearfulness, a want of courage or boldness to face danger. Timorousness, habitual cowardice. Quail, to lose heart, to be cowed or discouraged, to give way through fear to or before a formidable person or thing. To quiver, or to quaver here is to quiver, as from weakness and tremble. I don't remember which word was used by Habakkuk as God met him, and he was trembling as he sensed the word of God when God's visitation came to Habakkuk. So when God meets people, there's many different layers and spans of how fear comes to play. So when, for instance, Mary is visited by an angel, the angel has to set her at peace, right? Why? Well, because it was a fearful thing to meet an angel. When Paul contemplates the destruction that awaits the wicked, he's motivated to evangelize because he understands the terror of God. When God is seen as something awesome in the giving of the law in Sinai, you know, that's not a trivial thing. It was an inspiring act that moved people with fear. So maybe this summary would be helpful to just get this picture in your mind of the different ways of thinking about this. That these synonyms of fear denote the agitation and anxiety caused by the presence or imminence of danger. Fear is the most general term. Fright is sudden, usually momentary, great fear. Dread is strong fear, especially of what one is powerless to avoid. Terror is intense, overpowering fear. Horror is a combination of fear and aversion or repugnance. You can almost imagine that in a Jane Austen novel, right? The horror of having to court that man, right? Panic is a sudden frantic fear, often groundless. Alarm is a fright caused by the first realization of danger. Dismay robs one of courage or the power to act effectively. Consternation is often paralyzing, characterized by confusion and helplessness. Trepidation is dread, characteristically marked by trembling and hesitancy. So there's a lot to fear, obviously. Each one of these words is not used in precisely this manner in a particular verse that we've looked at, but these ideas and these constructs are very important to understanding the scope of the fear of God. And that's what this study is about, is to help us understand the scope of the fear of God and what it means for our life. So for our next class, we're going to look at chapter 1, the objects of and reasons for fear. And I apologize, not all the books arrived. Well, actually, none of them have arrived. I don't know why they're so slow in getting here, so I hope to have them soon. But there is a Kindle version available if people are interested that Logan put together for us. There's also a PDF available that I sent out in a piece of mail that will kind of get you started if you need to until the books arrive. I do hope they arrive. And if somebody just prefers a hardback, I have a couple copies, not of the same edition, but close enough here that you can borrow to use until the books do arrive. It's also, if you have a copy of Bunyan's collected works, they're in his works as well. So different ways to get it to you, and I apologize for the books not being here, but we'll pick them up next week. Questions or observations or thoughts about fear and its definitions? All right, let's pray.